Hello, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the NRF1 podcast, E252. Today, we are reviewing the Italian Grand Prix. Once again, you are joined by me, Rich. We might be having a special visit from Michael sometime later on. We don't know. We'll see. But he's been caught up. He's busy tonight. But it's all okay because we have with me two, I'm going to call them Italian Grand Prix experts. We have the guy who's been to an Italian Grand Prix and the guy who is Italian and lived near the circuit. We have Steve Rust and Alessandro Fumagalli.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, ciao.
Wow, not impressed. I just know you as Alex, so I had no idea of any other proper pronunciations or what have you.
I can't remember what Michael says, so I'm just, you know, kind of making it up as I go along, but I'm quite pleased I was correct with that. So yeah, Italy, it's Italian Grand Prix. I'm off there this week. I'm going on Friday, going out to Rome.
Oh, Rome, okay. I'm going back to Milan after tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, we'll meet halfway, go for a drink.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely an Italian week, and it's perfect, the Italian Grand Prix. So yeah, what did you guys make of it?
Good race. Finally, racing is back.
Definitely.
Not too much looking into being, you know, a little bit of a girly situation. Like, oh, he pushed me out, or he dashed me, or it is. It's racing, so that's good. Good to see.
And that's probably the fifth race in a row we've had which have been good. I think pretty much since everyone complained about Formula One being boring, they've been good races, haven't they? So it's been pretty good. I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been nice for me that it's always the old school circuits that that still proves that it's not boring, you know. So I've never said it was boring, but people have been complaining about it. But it's nice that, you know, we've had Spa, now Monza, it's thrown up good races, old school circuits. They can still pull them off.
Oh, definitely. I mean, could you imagine? You know, there's talk about the Formula One calendar recently released. We can talk about it further on later. But could you imagine if we had a Formula One calendar where we just had, you know, Austria, Hockenheim, Silverstone, Spa, Monza, Brazil, you know, the classic races, Canada, throw it in there. Just do three rounds at each one. Okay, seven races, but, you know, roll race tracks, do three rounds at each one. I think that'd be a brilliant season. Imagine that. That's a 21 race calendar there for the FIA. Sorted.
Yeah, I mean, you'd great viewing time for us, wouldn't it? Two o'clock. Every time. 2:10, should we say, but yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice and easy. It'd be perfect. But no, the Italian Grand Prix, it was a lot that went on, and it was obviously, you know, quite a difficult follow-up from Spa and all the events and everything that went on there. But I mean, you know, it seemed to deliver the Italian Grand Prix. And I mean, let's get straight down to business. The winner. I mean, could Italy be any more proud, Alex?
No. Probably yes with Vettel, but it's good to see Ferrari back there. It's like 9 years now, 9, 10 years since last time was Alonso was the winner. Yeah, so obviously it was nice to see Ferrari there. I think they were doing pretty well recently in the past races. We know that fast circuits, they are good for them. Mercedes got problems in a straight line. Their problems are coming up now. The further we're going, next one as well. I know it's different type of circuit, but still, Mercedes. I don't think Mercedes is there to where it should be, like last year or the previous ones.
So yeah. And it's kind of funny when you look at the Ferrari and the Mercedes this weekend, and you kind of see Mercedes outpaced in a straight line. You think, oh, they've got problems in top speed, and it's like, wait a second, let's compare this to someone like the Williams. That Williams we know has problems, and it's like, just because they're, you know, Mercedes, they're still running good, they're still missing, but it was like, yeah, they've got problems. It shows the kind of quality that they have in their car for us to suddenly pick up when they're second and third to say, yeah, they've got problems. It's a funny old way it works.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of proves and nails home about how good that Mercedes car is in the corners. You know, when we get to high downforce circuits like, well, Silverstone, a name one off the top of my head, you know, I mean, Ferrari were so badly off the pace and Mercedes ran away with it. But yeah, I mean, it proves that, you know, how good they are. But they've always been a bit like that. But I think Ferrari decided this year, for whatever reason, not the right one in my opinion, to build a slippy car, you know, and up the brake horsepower as much as they could. I mean, that's great at places like Monza, where we've just come from, maybe even Serve Spa, not really many other circuits.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I would tend to not sort of say that the Mercedes have slipped back a little bit compared to last season. I think it's just the car that Ferrari, in the direction that they chosen to design that car in, that's made them look pretty extra special, if you like, in this race, and to some extent the previous one.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, even though I'm not Italian, I'm not a Ferrari fan, I could have to say there was something special about seeing the celebrations from this, you know, this Ferrari victory. The whole last lap, you could see the fans on their feet cheering, applauding. I saw a clip on Twitter today of the Italian commentator basically just going berserk. It's like, I had no idea what he said apart from the drivers' names and the positions they finished in, but it was, you could hear what it meant to him, you know, what it meant to the fans. And you know, it's kind of nice to see Ferrari get that win, because they have had a tough season. And I mean, Leclerc, you know, he's had a tough first half of the season. He's come back, he won in Spa, and he won here in Monza. And I mean, he's on a bit of a roll of form at the minute. He's, you know, he's getting the two, he's got two wins now, and possibly this season, you could say, if it wasn't for Austria and what was the other one? Bahrain,
yeah.
He could have had four. So I mean, bit of luck, but you know, he could have had four. But I mean, yeah, he's on a bit of a roll of form at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally, in my opinion, for where he's been at, being at a new team and a relatively new driver, and where Ferrari's at the car, I think he's generally been on form pretty much all year. He's just had some bad luck. And you know, the car has not really been where he or the team would like it to be, but he's done exactly as I thought he would do this season, which is to outperform his teammate. I knew it wouldn't take him long, or certainly not a season, so he's done everything I expected him to do. But I mean, just going back to the other point you were saying about the atmosphere at the circuit, looking at some of the celebrations and everything, it seemed to me on that occasion to be more than we kind of have had in recent years at Silverstone. But I think that's due to how long they've had to wait for Ferrari to win there, because we got used to having Lewis Hamilton mostly winning at Silverstone in the last 4 or 5 years most of the time. But yeah, when you saw like the end and like the last few laps, and yeah, I mean, even the few times when Hamilton tried to get past and weren't successful, you know, I mean, they were all, you could hear them in the background, they've had to wait a while for that, so it's understandable.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing, when you hear the fans in the background cheering over the cars and hear the reaction, it just adds atmosphere to the whole race and the whole weekend. Now, we've been full of praise for Charlie Lee Clark, as we like to call him. Let's Alex, I'll let you take this one. Where can we start with Vettel? Where can we start with Vettel?
Who shall I s*** off now? Right, I said at the beginning of the season, I think Vettel's going to leave this season, after this season, for a simple reason is someone, not better, but someone good that can give him head-to-head, i.e. Ricciardo when he was Red Bull, got into Ferrari, he's going faster than him, he proved it. Apparently seems to be getting the car better in quality and race, and I don't think he can cope with the stress. I don't know what gets to him, but we've seen him doing so many mistakes in the points when it counts that it seems like he's like too much for him at the moment. And as I said a bit earlier, I think he did the same stuff when Ricciardo or Ricardo, however people want to call him, got to Red Bull. I believe, firmly believe, that this season is going to be the last for him at Ferrari.
You should put a prediction writing on that. I already said
Hamilton Vettel mixed up, because people want to see Hamilton. Hamilton would love to go into Ferrari, and Vettel would love to get out of Ferrari at the moment, I would say. So yeah, my prediction is that it won't happen, would never happen, but it will in my head.
If you were the team boss.
If I was the team boss, I would get 100% Hamilton in Ferrari. It will take Ferrari and complete in a different step. They are getting there slowly. They show that with Leclerc. It's just needing someone experienced, someone that won like 5 world titles in a row. We need someone with that can stay under pressure. That's just good, but it's lacking.
You heard that here first. Vettel is good, but he's lacking. Right, that's the perfect way to sum up Vettel for this evening. I think that's going to go down into a quote somewhere. We might tweet that.
I feel like Rosberg, but it's all right.
Speaking of Rosberg, I read an article today, and it was Max Verstappen, I think, after the Belgian Grand Prix, talking about Rosberg. Did you see the same thing?
Is Rosberg is a lovely businessman. I think he's a businessman, Rosberg. He chickened out of Formula 1. Not chickened out. He got out of Chicago Formula 1 because he's scared of something happens to him. And he opens this business with YouTube where he talks about drivers all the time. No one can tell him anything. Or if they do, he doesn't care. And I think he mentioned Verstappen. He said something basically with regards to the car crash he had in Spa, and Verstappen, obviously. We know it doesn't take long for him to just dig in, I would say. So yeah, that a little bit. And it was funny because on Sky Formula 1 as well, I think it was just before the race, or on a Saturday, it was Crofty and Rosberg. They were doing a kind of ask Crofty question to Rosberg, and they said, "Oh, come on, Max, you're probably watching this. Come out and talk to us." And it was like, "I would love that to happen on live TV," but yeah, he didn't really.
I heard Verstappen basically described Rosberg as the modern Villeneuve of Formula One.
Yeah,
he's, you know, he retired and has a lot to say afterwards. I thought that was quite an interesting way to wrap it up. One time world championship, you know, world champion, and yeah, you know, straight from there. But back to the Grand Prix, back to the Italian Grand Prix. Let's go back to Vettel. Now, we kind of quickly discussed it, but this whole kind of incident that happened in the race, I don't know how to describe it, but Vettel spun, beached himself on a curb, thought, "Oh, forget it, I can't be bothered to wait until it's safe," and just drove. Kind of just clashed with Stroll, who was straight on the radio to whinge about Vettel, and then managed to be the only person in history to be a hypocrite within the space of about 3 seconds, as he did exactly the same thing to Gasly. I mean, just what was going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I thought the commentators, well, if you're watching on Sky, that was, like I was. I mean, Martin Brundle sort of said, "Oh, yeah, after watching the replay several times, there's no way that he could have been able to have, like, Vettel, this was to tell, you know, what cars are coming." I looked at it and thought, well, it was kind of parked like that. The track was going around, you know, he can move his head to the left quite far enough round to just see, you know, initially with his cars coming, and he made no effort to do that, just pulled straight out in front of other cars. That was a reasonably fast enough corner, but in other circuits that could have been really nasty.
I was watching, and the cameraman, or you know, the race director, what, for the camera crew, was having a bit of a nightmare that weekend, cutting away from action. As you saw Stroll come into the picture, he cut away to show shocked faces on the crowd, and you could hear people going, "Oh!" Yeah. And I was thinking, "Oh, you know, this is huge." I was thinking, "This is a really bad accident. You know, someone's gone straight into the side of him, you know, 120 miles an hour or something." I was thinking, "This is going to be horrific." And I was like, "Oh, they've crashed!" And I was calling it in my head, you know, in my head and out loud whilst watching, and I was fearing the worst. And it came back, and it was just, you know, a bit of front wing accident, you know, a bit of front wing damage, and Stroll was on the ground. And I was thinking, you know, like you were going to say, that could have been horrendous, couldn't it?
Because, I mean, at the time, because of the cameras, the things that you just mentioned, and I was immediately thinking of what happened at Spa in the F2 race, I was wondering, given that, whether they might have considered maybe black flagging him. But then when I saw the replays several times, I thought, yeah, it doesn't quite really warrant that, but I'm sure it might have briefly crossed their minds, because just driving aimlessly straight into the middle of, you know, of a corner where they're doing reasonable speeds, whatever it is, it was pretty stupid, really. But yeah, I mean, with as regards to Stroll, I mean, I looked at that and I thought, yeah, you're gonna get a penalty as well. It's not going to be as harsh, but you're going to get one for that as well.
Yeah,
but I think he had slightly lesser chance of being able to see cars around and coming round. but he probably ought to have had a fair idea, because I mean, he was quite close to, before the incident happened, he was quite close to a lot of cars anyway, to have known that they will be inevitably quite close to him. But
I mean, they've all got radios, and you'd think in that moment, surely the team, where they have, you know, the driver tracker and everything, the map, surely they can see where there's a gap and possibly on the radio and say, you know, wait, there's a gap after the Renault, okay, these cars are going fast, it's hard to distinguish, and you know, they're pressing buttons on the steering wheel to pull away. But you think, surely there can be some aid there, you know, something to say, go, go, pull away now. It was a really strange incident, and I mean, thank goodness no one, you know, no one was hurt, everyone was okay, no major crash or anything there. But it was the weirdest thing ever. We were watching the race and you're kind of waiting for something to happen, and then that just out of nowhere, it's like, and it just, I mean, yeah, there were several drivers, you know, who were lucky to escape that as well.
Yeah, no, there was. I mean, there was a few were able to kind of more or less just drive, see it from, you know, half a cornerback drive around it, but there were a few that, I think, I want to say maybe even Russell or one of the other Williams drivers nearly, I think he might have been one of them who nearly whacked straight into Vettel, and I didn't ever really quite see a better off replay, but it looked like he just managed to get around. But yeah, that could have turned, because I mean, in the end it was only the two of them really, but it could have turned into, because I think one of them took onto the grass, I think, to go around them. That was another driver as well. But I forget now, but yeah, I mean, that could have easily have turned into half a dozen cars, really.
It's just a good job that it wasn't a wet track like it was forecast to be, otherwise that could have been, you know, insane, couldn't it?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so as we move further on, we should just point you in the way of other ways. That's not a very good sentence, is it? We should just point you into a few places where you can get in touch with us. The best place to start is patreon.com/NRF1. You'll find posts, videos, loads of analysis from the podcast people. That address again is patreon.com/NRF1. Or download the Patreon app and find us on there. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook with the handle @TheNRF1. And we also love getting your emails too. That address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Also, our website link, nrf1.uk, and all the links to the podcast are there as well, as all the other places that we've previously mentioned. So definitely go on, have a look. And plenty more coming soon and plenty to get involved with. So please do. We'd love to hear from you and love all your support. Okay, next up, we are going to do the NRF1 pit stops. So today we're in the pit lane, we're in Monza, we're wandering down, you can see Williams, you've got all the other teams, there's Mercedes at the end. Let's go past all of them and let's go straight in to a rather cheeky pit stop, the FIA stewards room. So I bet none of you were expecting that, were you? So it's Italian Grand Prix, let's be fair, it wasn't without its fair share of controversy on either Saturday or Sunday, was it?
Yeah, I mean, can I say that? Can I ask something? Can you try and redo that with a David Attenborough voice? You can see. No, I'm joking. It was a fairly easy weekend, I would say. I mean, Hamilton had lots of issues himself. Shamble Q3. I mean, quite a few things to keep entertaining people, that's for sure.
Yeah, so let's go straight into the Saturday. Qualifying was going well, it was quite exciting. We get to Q3, and then they kind of do their first lap times, and then Raikkonen has, I think, a moment at Parabolica, goes off, takes the rear end of his car, so it was looking like a straightaway gearbox change. And then all the teams go back into the pits, track is clear, they go out with 1 minute 40 remaining on the clock, and every single, or one of the remaining 9 drivers decides to go out at exactly the same moment. Now, I'm not an F1 engineer, so I don't really have a right to complain about this, but either I'm really stupid, or why not just go out with 2 minutes to go, make sure you've got a nice clear track, you've got track position, okay, the slipstream is worth a lot, but everyone wants a slipstream. You might as well just have a go at a bonsai lap, do what you can to set your fastest lap. If not, get both of your drivers and say, okay, you get the first run at 8 minutes, you get the second run at 4 minutes. Just send them out one after the other. Both. Surely there's a better way than doing what they did.
I quite agree. And in sort of normal circumstances, they are all pretty good. They get it right in sending them out in the right time. And it's all about margins in F1. You know, if you can sneak in a really late lap and you can time it right, you can get a bit of slipstream, like you say, especially here at Monza, it's pretty powerful. And the track's really rubbered in. And that might be the difference for a smaller midfield team, you know, getting maybe something like sixth or something if they made it through to Q3 to maybe sort of eighth, ninth, or even tenth in some circumstances. But occasionally you get mess ups happen, and this was probably the most ridiculous one I've ever watched. So I think it might have been a bit different if some of the top teams, you know, with Mercedes, Ferrari, had have kind of sent theirs out to the front of that pack, because I think they would have been sort of sensible enough and smart enough to sort of go when there was enough time to get to the line to set a time. But unfortunately they were to the back of that pack, and they were being led by Hülkenberg, Sainz, and remind me of the other Stroll, that's it. And mind you, you could argue Hülkenberg really, and even Sainz to an extent, should we also really know better, quite experienced drivers now. But it was just bizarre, because it was a case of like, well, the clock's ticking down, and I'm pretty sure this kind of the start finish line is you know, a little distance away. You need to go now, sort of thing. And I just kind of kept like looking back, and I was like, what's going on? And I think even the commentators were a bit slow to kind of like pick up on it. And I think it was just Sainz who was the only one who managed to kind of set a time, but then obviously he got penalised for it anyway. I think they all got reprimands or something, didn't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a total farce.
It was crazy. I mean, Hülkenberg led them out, and I mean, there's a video Formula One put on YouTube of all the team radios. And I think they said to Hülkenberg, right, you know, you're first out on track, you know the plan or whatever. And then they had Stroll just behind, and they said to him, you watch out for Hülkenberg, he might play games. So Hülkenberg went through, and he didn't even try the first corner. He went down the slip road. It's like, are you allowed to do that on an outlap? Because there wasn't any reason. So, I mean, I can understand, you know, surely a reprimand for that. You didn't need to leave the track when he did, and he was obviously trying to get the other cars to go past, but then Stroll was just going slow, was like, no, not going to do it. And he held signs up, and of course you had both Mercedes, both Ferraris further back.
I think they were trying to do what Mercedes normally do, that they come out and then they put themselves on the far left to let other cars go, and then they go behind and they try to use the tow. there was a lot of talk after that, after the qualifying. There were even Sainz, I think it was Sainz, yeah, in the interview, they were trying to talk with Anthony Davidson, I believe, I don't remember now, but they were trying to find a way or how it could be changed. And I don't think anyone at the moment has got an answer for it, because it's half a second in Monza, and for the driver, when they're talking about a 10th distance for between pole position and second place, half a second can change a lot in qualifying. So that's what they were trying to get, but it's not a good show. That should be, you know, should be, as you said, why not take him out like 20 seconds earlier? Even Hülkenberg, why not send him out 20 seconds earlier?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the weird thing is, you know, all those teams could have left with, you know, 2:40 on the clock, an extra minute, and they still might not have got around, because they were all messing around trying to get the perfect position.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, Sainz was the only one who crossed the line, I think, in the end, to even be able to start a lap. And I was out on Saturday at a Hawaiian themed party of all things. And so I missed qualifying, and it came up on my phone, and it said, you know, Q3 is a farcical end to it. And I was just like, oh, this is dramatic. And I looked up and read, and I was like, oh, it's just this. And my first reaction was just, this has been coming for so long, because it seems to happen quite often. You know, they go out with not very long on the clock, and they're fighting for position. And I think it was at China, wasn't it, where Verstappen had his lap ruined because was it Ricciardo in the Renault might have been, who decided he didn't have long enough left on the clock, so he just overtook at the penultimate corner, and Verstappen was like, oh, I'm going to go, and then he didn't because he was too close to the other cars. And it's been you know, brewing a while. It's been coming a while. It's why no one's done anything to actually sort it out before, or, you know, think of a better way around. I don't know, but it was crazy.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I don't quite know what the answer is, really. I wouldn't really want to see any more rules introduced, you know. I think it would be sensible at this stage to just, I mean, they have these driver briefings anyway with the FIA, to just sort of say, look, you've got to work together at least, or at least agree to disagree. We can't quite allow this to happen again, you know. We appreciate, obviously, you try and do the best and make the most out of it, but I think that's all they could do, really. I'd really hate to see another rule come in.
No, and let's be fair, the qualifying that we have right now is good, it's entertaining, yeah. And that's the first time that that's actually properly happened in, I don't know how long.
I don't think I've ever seen it, and I've been watching Formula 1 longer than I could certainly remember at this moment in time, but yeah, I've certainly never seen it.
Yeah, it's been a good long time.
They were talking about Super Pole. How good would it be the Super Pole instead of a Q3, a Super Pole? You do Q1, Q2, and then you go out one lap straight, boom. You do your out lap, and then you go one lap to make your time. That's it.
That could be quite cool.
It would be, I think, would be very interesting. That
you can almost do it in world championship order. So, you know, whoever's in the top 10, if they're lower down the order in the world championship, they go out first, and if they're higher up, they go out last. But then I suppose you have the added complication of wet weather. Whereas if it's wet weather,
and you could argue that the last driver out would get a little bit of an advantage because the track would just be a little bit more rubbered in, things
that
like
track
that.
Evolution.
You would get there's so many fine margins that they all complain about. I think it would be a great idea, but yeah. I think there probably would be their argument against something like that.
Yeah, especially the top teams, I can imagine actually thinking about that.
Oh, so. Yeah, pedantic they could be.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if anyone of you both heard that they were also talking potentially as an option, the same as go-karts, when they do a mini race to basically, in go-karts, like World Championship or something like that, Europeans, you do a mini race, like a 9-lap, and based on that result of the race, you start the real race on that.
Okay, so like a qualifying race, essentially.
Yeah, it's like a qualifying race, yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
This is just, instead of doing like 70, you do 5 or 9, or however you want to do.
I'd be interested to see. Imagine everyone turning up their engines to like Q3 mode, going, you know, absolutely flat out. And
the only thing I would say with that is if you had 10, like in Q3 session, if you had 10 drivers out there, and given the gap between sort of maybe the top 3 to the lower end of the top 10, yeah, if you look at the qualifying gaps, how long would it take before they then start catching each other up on the track, you know, and then you get into either overtaking when somebody's trying to do a qualifying where they're not going to want to move over because they're trying to get a faster lap, but I don't know, really. I don't know. Who knows?
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I had to give you some beers.
Speaking of the FIA stewards and more, you know, controversy within the race, we're not even done yet. We've got, during the race, there was an incident between Leclerc and Hamilton, of course. I was just forgetting who it was for a minute. But yeah, Leclerc and Hamilton going into the, what's essentially, I suppose, the second chicane. I don't know what it's called.
I think it's Les Mo de la Roja. No, De la Roja. That is the De la Roja bits, basically. Coming off first chicane, Les Mo de la Roja. Then you go in a second variante. First variante, second variante, down the back of the tunnel, Ascari, straight to the Parabolica, and back to the first.
This guy knows the track.
Formula 1 on PS4, I tell you that.
We're going to have to do this one, though.
De la Roja, anyway, yes.
But at the chicane, Hamilton got a good run on Leclerc, who went to what's essentially the outside for the left, would have been the inside for the right.
Yeah,
we've seen cars overtake there in the past on both sides. Yeah. And Leclerc was arguably a bit of a naughty boy, you know, squeezed Hamilton. He got a black and white flag, you know, a warning saying basically don't do that again. Hamilton claimed he was pushed off the track. What do you make of all this? There was no penalty given, just a black and white flag. What's your take?
It's racing. I would not want to see a driver penalised for racing. Yes, he didn't probably leave the holes. I think he left half a car, I would say. And there was that. Him defending his position a bit harshly by his racing.
He definitely had his elbows out, and I mean, when you look at on board, you can see there was space. It wasn't like he was forced into the wall or such, but he wasn't given space to take the corner.
He didn't make contact, he didn't touch. He just, Hamilton, I think, he got probably scared of getting contact with Leclerc, and he gone off a little bit, and then obviously he didn't take the apex. And he just went straight, but yeah, that was racing. Took the elbow out, control his position. Same thing could have happened. Albon and Sainz.
Yeah,
that was, you know, that was the same thing. Albon from the inside, Sainz from the outside. You know, he could have moved the same way.
Yeah,
it's just how you defend. I would say, yeah.
And Steve, I know you were selling a Sally. You had a good chat with your boss. So take it away. What's all the ins and outs from your side?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was talking to my boss today at work about this, who's a big Formula One fan. Hello, Leon, by the way. We were kind of talking about sort of a number of instances between the two of them. I mean, on that one, I mean, I think it was hard but fair. I mean, the important thing to remember, there wasn't any contact, and although Hamilton had to back out of it, he didn't really lose anything major out of it. Yeah, if he had lost a position, then I think they would have had to have looked at that and sort of said, well, yeah, look, you know, he lost out big time in that, but he didn't really lose anything too much. So I think they put it down as a bit of a slap on the wrist. Yeah, it's not ruined the race result by imposing some time penalty on the end, which we've seen in the past and all this sort of stuff. So I think it was hard but fair. I mean, there was another sort of incident or two, because later on, or if that was not before actually, but one of the two, where Leclerc came up to, I think, probably the same chicane, or probably out to references on that, knowing the track so well, but he missed his braking point, and then on that particular part of the course, they've then got the little kind of bollards that you just do sort of S's through to rejoin the track. I mean, when I was talking to my boss about this at work, I mean, he sort of said that he felt that he kind of gained an advantage because he didn't, another circuit, there might have been a wall there, or there might have been a, you know, a verge or some gravel or something like that, whereas I sort of argued, well, that's how that circuit is. It's the same for any other driver who missed it, and he rejoined the track in the same position as the two cars were in by the time Hamilton had come around anyway, so I didn't really feel at the time that there was any advantage gained. So that would be my opinion on that one. So yeah, there were a number of sort of incidents, but I think I've been reading on some of the sites tonight that sort of said that, oh, there's been like a new precedent set, you know, we're not penalising Claire, and there's been some usual conspiracy saying, well, you know, it's Ferrari, they were at the home race. What a load of rubbish, you know. I mean, I'm not a Ferrari fan, you know, but I'm not going to buy into that at all, you know. I mean, it's one incident there, I think they judged it right, and the other, there was no problem with that, in my opinion. So
yeah,
I think it was racing. I've seen a lot worse. So
I mean, let's just look back. I mean, you know, the stewards, I think, are definitely learning. You look at Canada, and there was a big argument there with Vettel and Hamilton on that occasion, and I mean, you know, the incident wasn't too dissimilar. The amount of space left, you know, was the ultimate issue. And then you look at Hungary, you know, before that, even Austria with Leclerc, you know, Verstappen on that occasion, they were having, you know, elbows out battle, both of them. and then Hungary. Leclerc did a bit of a chop across. I think it was a Bottas possibly, I can't remember who. But I think Leclerc did a bit of a, he kind of just chopped across the front of one of the guys when they were trying to overtake it. I might have completely blamed that on Leclerc, and it was actually someone else. I'm going to have to look back.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Remember.
But there was something there. But it seems the stewards are learning this. You know, they're saying, the fans want racing, let's let the drivers race. And I mean, if they'd given a penalty to Leclerc, you know, 5 seconds or something, that, I think in my opinion, that would have been laughable, because it's like, you can't jump and give a penalty every time someone tries a race manoeuvre. If you're going to do that, I mean, you may as well not try and overtake. I mean, we've seen plenty of moves. I mean, look back to the Schumacher era and some of the things he got away with, you know, at times.
Oh, yeah.
Other times he was penalised, and, you know, rightly so. But, I mean, some of the stuff he got away with, and it's like, oh, the, you know, the stewards, are, at the end of the day, they're human. Sometimes they make mistakes, sometimes they get it right. But they seem to be learning and kind of, you know, really realising what they want. And, of course, you know, it's not Charlie Whiting anymore, who we've been used to for so many years. I mean, sadly, you know, it's someone else now, but I suppose it's, you know, it's the fans, we've all got to get used to that as well.
Yeah, I fully agree with it. I was watching today a video on YouTube about it from the Formula One channel. Anthony Davison was with a FIA race director, and they were talking about, you know, the Leclerc situation and whatever happened after, also with Sainz and Albon. And this, he said that specifically the drivers asked them to give out more black and white instead of penalties, because black and white, if there's a situation given the black and white, you give the black and white and then you get a penalty the second time.
I mean, what's the point in the flag if it's never used? So
exactly that's the thing, because we were just used to, oh, that's a penalty. Now, if it's not dangerous or if it doesn't involve a contact, I think it should be just a sporting behaviour, so black and white flag. You know, I don't think we should just give out penalties because they're in a race. We saw with Vettel, yeah, he did something very, very bad, and he got basically half a second penalty, basically. You know, that completely taking him out of the race, basically.
They seem to be making progress anyway, so it's all good, and it's all action at the end of the day, and that's what we love. So
yep.
Right, time is ticking, so let's carry on and let's go straight in to our of the weekends. That's gonna be the new jingle now. So let's kick it off first of all and say our Rodolfo Gonzalez driver of the weekend.
Shall I start? I love my Lando Norris. I love him. I would take him home. He's such a cutie.
I said before that he's soon, you know, he's all fast becoming even the best personality in Formula One. He's just this kind of lovable, likable, laughable guy in the sport.
Like,
he's just having the time of his life, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like a teddy bear who's got into a room full of toys and he's having fun. And that's what I love about him. It's like, apart from loving Valentino Rossi, which, you know, is my idol as well, he's a gamer, so, you know, hats off as well. And he seems having a lot of fun in a car that is developing good, and he drives well. It's him and Sainz, they're taking back McLaren where it should be now, considering the past few years, and hopefully they can do even better. So I would 100% Lando Norris. I love you.
I'm sure we can send a proposal on Twitter
or something. Put it on Twitter. I'm going to repost to him.
Just don't tell the missus, I'm sure. Steve, what about you, driver of the weekend?
It's a bit of a difficult one. I mean, I was sort of leaning towards Leclerc, really, if I'm honest. But then, I mean, he did well to keep Hamilton behind him. You know, the whole race, not an easy thing to do. Yeah, there were some mistakes, but it probably weren't that much for a perfect weekend for anyone, really. but I'd probably lean towards him. But I think a worthy mention, a very quiet fourth place Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah,
you know, actually had pretty tidy racing and got some pretty good points there for what Renault would normally expect.
Yeah,
where
definitely.
They are at the moment, definitely. So yeah, that'd probably be my sort of a rough two, even though you meant to mention one. But
yeah, we'll make it up. I would have said Ricciardo, because that's my accent, my Italian accent. But I thought he had a good race, you know, fourth place, solid fourth place. And like you say, you know, McLaren have been beating Renault recently, and Renault got some, you know, for their team, big points with a little bit of luck, with some problems from McLaren. But anyway, next up, Team Lotus, Team of the Weekend.
I mean, Renault did get fourth and fifth in the end, but then they played their hand in the farce on Saturday, so maybe you couldn't quite give them that. I think
it's difficult because team had a clear weekend. You know, Ferrari obviously had one good car and one not quite.
Mercedes on the Sunday, I mean, gave it their best shot. They threw everything at Ferrari. They could have just taken second and third or what have you, but they did throw everything at it. You know, I think they came into the weekend being sort of expected to be second to Ferrari. But yeah, I mean, there was no clear one driver particularly or one team for the whole weekend. Everyone had their fair share of mistakes, really, to be fair. But maybe between Renault and Mercedes, really.
Yeah. What were you, Alex?
I'm the same. I wouldn't know who to give it to, for a simple fact that no one had real clear session. But saying that, there are two teams that this year are coming up a lot. One is Alfa Romeo and one is McLaren. Now both finished their race again with one each, because their partner decided to retire. But all in all, if you look in general statistic, I would say that Alfa Romeo, because they're coming up quite good, so I would just because I don't know who else to give it to, I would say Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a difficult one for definite. So yeah, have anyone at home, if you've got a better shout and you think we're all idiots, then get in touch and tell us. But next up is our favourite, Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. I mean, I can think of one guy I think who's going to be winning this.
Let me think about it.
How long do you need?
Not much. I'm just, you do it first.
Can't say.
Vettel. I mean, well, we've said the reasons why. I mean, it's just another dismal weekend, really. A weekend of mistakes, struggles. Yeah, I mean, perhaps another podcast we could touch on the full extent of that. I think we've probably discussed. It's where we had enough of our time on this particular pod.
We'll do a Vettel special.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be my one.
Do you agree, Alex?
It's very easy to say Vettel. I would agree 100%, although very easy. I was thinking of Verstappen somehow, for the simple fact of that he could have been up there with the bigs in the end of year results. But now it's basically two races where one goes 0 points and the other one goes fucked up.
That's something quite incredible, and we can touch on this in a bit. I won't say it right now, but I'll save it for a bit because we've got someone else we can discuss it. But yeah,
I would just say him just for the reason that he could have done better these two races to be up there with, you know, Bottas. So.
He did make a mess of the first corner, didn't he, Verstappen? Yeah. He kind of just misjudged it and seemed to
he just went into it, wing off.
Perhaps another few more races like that, they'll just send it to Rosso.
Get the other guy back.
Now, yeah.
All forgiven.
Okay, next up, Giuliano Salvi, moments of the weekend. I think there's one moment.
I should study more for this one.
There's one moment we haven't touched on, and I think it has to be personally my moment of the weekend, simply for how shocking it was. But the Formula 3 race.
Oh, yeah.
The guy, Alex Pironi, was it?
Pironi, yes.
Pironi. He had a
I don't even know how to describe it, but he took off basically off one of the aptly named sausage curbs. I think we're just going to call them ramps now, but round parabolic, he just ran wide, hit one of them, and he was barrel rolling through the sky. I mean, I don't know what the airtime was, because I've seen it, the slow motion replay, and that's it. But it's, he was in the air for some time, and he landed on top of the catch fence and the tyres, and he got out and he walked away. And it's, I mean, after last week, we didn't want to see any more crashes, you know, especially to the younger ones. That was quite shocking, but I mean, wow, that was something incredible. I've not seen a car probably do that since Valencia in, what was it, 20?
Oh yeah, was it 12? Weber?
Yeah, Weber.
Curve alignment or something.
Was
like
it
that?
10 or 12? I can't remember. But yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around about that period. Yeah, I remember that one actually. Yeah,
that was yeah
last season as well, when I think Alonso went through Leclerc at the top of his head.
Yeah,
we had a few moments like that. And yeah, if we have to go for a shocking moment, then that one. Otherwise, I like to put Albon on Sainz. I think that was a moment, a good racing moment.
That was two young drivers just throwing their all at racing and putting everything into that position. And
yeah,
it was good racing. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Monza's one of those circuits where, because it's a fast circuit and because you get benefit of the slipstream, and obviously DRS been chucked in, you know, in recent years, which helps, so you kind of generally do get a pretty good race like this. And yeah, I mean, for like the midfield teams and things like that, you know, there's generally some pretty good racing there on a circuit like that with all the aforementioned. So yeah, I mean, there was some good moves going on actually. You know, it was kind of a little bit missed by what was going on at the front sometimes, but or not highlighted as much really. But yeah, there was some good stuff going on.
Yeah, okay, so let's rate the race out of 11. I have no idea what the previous ones got, but I'm sure they probably scored around the 8, 9, 10 mark. So Monza, what do you think, Alex?
I'll give it 10. Good racing, fairly good result.
The Italian guy when a Ferrari wins says a fairly good result. That's something.
Yeah, I'm not really a Ferrari fan myself, so, but it was good to see the Ferrari creation after all, basically, you know, the fans, the tifosi as they call them. It's good to see, obviously. Yeah,
brilliant. What about you, Steve?
I always tend to think sort of around about the 8.5 sort of mark. Can we give a half points?
Yeah, we can give half points. We'll give half points.
25 as well. 8.25 if you
want. You can get into all the points. I mean, Michael sorts this out, not me. So go into multiple decimals if you wish.
I was thinking sort of 8.5. You know, I was thinking there's some other races further back in the season that sort of warrants bigger ratings than that. So yeah, I'll stick with the 8.5.
Cool. I'd probably say around 9. Keep it nice and easy. So yeah, it was a good race ultimately. So, and that's, yeah, 5th, 6th, brilliant race in a row. So
yeah,
love it. Okay, so before we move on and look at Singapore, we just need to touch on the Norfolk notebook. As you know, here in Norfolk, we take pride in our F1 talent, and we've got two on the grid who maybe they're slightly adopted, but George Russell, just up the road. Alex Albon, his PR company or manager company. They're based in Norwich.
Yeah, and I think he's from Ipswich, is that right?
But yeah, but we don't want to talk about Ipswich.
Oh, right, you're fair enough.
But those two, they had good weekends. I mean, there's a point I was going to say a minute ago about Albon. He's been in Red Bull 2 races, and okay, it's not his own, you know, fault, but Verstappen has been outraced by Albon in finishing positions, at least in both races. Yeah. Okay, Verstappen's had penalties and been at the back of the grid, but Albon's been, you know, had quite a successful start to his Red Bull career.
Yeah, no, it's been good, really, because I mean, unfortunately, with Red Bull, there is a history of they don't really give too much of a chance, and if you start to sort of, well, not fail really, but not perform, there kind of seems to be the threat, and then they just demote you to Toro Rosso, you know, which I have my own thoughts and opinions on, but yeah, it's good to see that at least he's doing. I quite like him. I quite rate him. I didn't know too much of a monster about him coming in. I kind of just knew him more as the name. But yeah, he's doing good so far. So I hope he doesn't end up like most of the Red Bull drivers, where they tend to end up going back to Toro Rosso, or to Toro Rosso if they can start there in the first place. So, but yeah, he's doing good so far. So yeah,
yeah. And George Russell, the other one, I think he got a 14th place finish in the race. Okay, it was a bit of luck because there was a lot that happened. He's ahead of his teammate. He's really getting used to that, Williams, and getting some decent results.
He's doing good. I think he's in the wrong car for him. I'm scared that he's going to be burnt out by people say, oh, it's shot. And big teams not looking at him. So I'm scared of that, because it seems to be a good prospect. Let's not forget, he's a champion of F2 currently. So hopefully he will still have a good prospect for hopefully next year, maybe do something different. You know, Hülkenberg is out, Ocon will follow him, maybe some other changes can be made. But yeah, hopefully he can get a good seat for next year or the next few years, I would say. Let's not burn him out.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's have a quick, probably quite brief, as we've gone on quite long because we've got carried away talking about Italy. But let's go on and talk about Singapore. It's the next race. The race in the last couple of seasons has come alive a bit. I mean, we had 2 years ago, we had a cracking race there in the wet, and then last year we had a race which is brilliant, essentially, because Sergio Perez decided to drive into lots of people. So I mean, yeah, the Singapore Grand Prix seemed a bit of a gimmick when it first came out, being a night race and whatnot, but it seems to really kind of taken off now.
Yeah, I always quite like, I mean, I'm not a fan of street circuits, you know, I have said that before, you know, but it's kind of one of the street circuits that I, or that we have had on account of a number of years, I actually quite look forward to, because first the flyaways anyway from the European start of the season, but it usually does produce a good race, but I always think of it as a little bit more than a street circuit, you know, we all tend to sort of think Monaco-esque type of thing, but yeah, you can overtake on that. And you know, and the DRS isn't completely useless, as it is mostly round street circuits there. And I mean, obviously being a night race, it kind of adds a bit more of a twist to it. But I think it'll be a pretty good race. I mean, I think it'll probably be more back to business as usual. In that, I mean, more sort of Mercedes back at the front, you know, and then sort of probably Red Bull a bit more closer in there, and then Ferrari sort of best of the rest, as they say. I think they should be in for another good race, hopefully, and keep the momentum going, you know.
Yeah definitely hope so. What about you, Alex? Are you looking forward to Singapore?
I am. I really like Singapore as a race. Not sure about the track itself. I think it's very, very technical, and probably this year many drivers will struggle with it because we've got some youngsters in there.
Especially the heat there is obviously something incredible. Yeah. So I mean, hopefully the young drivers, they're extremely fit, all the drivers, but that's gonna be quite an impact for the younger ones, isn't it?
The heat obviously will play a big part, but also the technicality itself of the track, we say, is going to be quite a struggle for some. I hope that my boy will do good, i.e. Lando Norris. I'm looking forward to it anyway. Yeah,
brilliant. So normally we get one prediction from each of us, so we'll do the same right now. We'll get one prediction. We get the rest of the predictions in the Patreon podcast, which if you want to listen to that, then you definitely can do. Just go to patreon.com, patreon.com/NRF1, and sign up and support, and you'll get all the information there. So, predictions. Who wants to go first?
Yeah. Verstappen will bottle out again.
Sorry?
Verstappen will bottle out again.
He'll bottle out again?
Yes. He's going to be a contact. He's not going to be by himself, but he's going to be somewhere silly that he will create a contact.
Now, that is a shout. Steve, what about you?
I think you're going to see, moving away from the top teams, which is, can be all too predictable, but I think you're going to see another or a decent race for Renault again. That's what I'm going to go for.
How do you qualify a decent race?
Well, I mean, they got 4th and 5th last weekend, but I think they'll have a strong top 10 finish, you know, sort of probably somewhere around sort of maybe 5th, 6th, something like that, which is good for them at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, good for them. I think we will see it probably likely on Saturday, a Mercedes lockout, if I'm honest, on the front row. I think I would put that down as a prediction.
Okay, well, we'll leave that there, because we'll get the rest of them in our Patreon podcast.
Oh yes, of course.
So there was a little sneak for them all, but that's fine. But I've got to make some now, and the first one I'm going to say is Alex Albon will be on the podium. That's my shout. So let's see if that happens. Anyway, I think that's pretty much it. We've gone through Italy, we've had a quick look at Singapore, so we'll leave it there. We'll head over to Patreon. There's plenty more to come. We've got more to talk about, more pit stops to talk about from the Italian Grand Prix. We've got more to touch on for the Singapore Grand Prix. We've even got some discussion about the Italian national anthem, if you remember, a couple of years ago. We've got all that to come, and of course the rest of our predictions. So head over to Patreon, get involved, get in touch, do what you can, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for your continued support. Thank you for joining us this evening. It's been a great one here at the Rush Cutters. I don't think I mentioned that earlier, but we are at the Rush Cutters, a very busy Rush Cutters, in fact. Thank you very much, and it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Alex and Steve.
Ciao.
Goodbye.
And we will see you over on Patreon, or we'll see you next time for the Singapore review. Goodbye.